Okay.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and JMD Mateus. We started with the very first issue, and our coverage goes all the way through breakdowns. We're going issue by issue in release order, tackling two comics per episode, both a Justice League America issue and a Justice League Europe issue. Now, along the way, we're also taking time out for special episodes covering the quarterly book, interviews with various comic book creators, discussing the plethora of spin-off series, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and more. And when we're all done, we'll wrap up our coverage by looking at the 2003 and 2005 stories formerly known as the Justice League, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as...
Batman.
Martian Manhunter.
Captain Atom.
Fire. Ice.
Rocket Red.
The Flash.
The Elongated Man.
Maxwell Lord.
Elrond.
Power Girl.
Renard Russe. I mean, Crimson Fox.
Guy Gardner.
Metamorpho.
Booster Gold.
Blue Beetle.
Nort. Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
Hi, this is T. Brooklyn Bellissimo. I was the special effects coordinator on the show Werewolf, and you are listening to the Dead TV Podcast.
Every cape, there's a baffled bystander. Where there's a villainous laser, there's a cowering commuter. With every super battle above, there's a super scared civilian below. How in a world of day-to-day danger can hapless humans hang on? Never fear, the team at Wayne's Security is here. With the products that give back power to the powerless.
The rubble bounces off, but it destroys everyone around it.
Some products are still in testing.
Welcome back to the Dead TV Podcast, the first podcast of 2025 for the show.
Yay!
Right, Mr. Zetica?
Woo! I'm wiggling my fingers here. Yeah.
Mr. Zetica is exhausted after many, many trips into the multiverse.
I like over the holidays, I went to California to visit family. That was great, you know. But everything coming back, I'm coming back to snow. I have my regular parties that are now starting to take off. So every second Thursday of the month, I now have a Mr. Zeneca's Playtime Munch event, and they've been selling out. So that's been quite a bit of my time, and driving all over creation for my son. Yeah, I'm exhausted. Being a full time mom is exhausting.
I've been knee deep in DC Comics lore with I just finished Batman Resurrection. Have you heard of this novel?
No.
It just came out this October. It's written by John Jackson Miller, and it is a direct sequel to 1989's Batman, directed by Tim Burton, starring Michael Keaton.
Really?
It is a brand new novel set in the Timverse. Tim Burton, excuse me, let me clear my throat, Tim Burton's universe. And it's about, it takes like 6 months after the Joker's death. And the Last Laugh Gang is still trying to, continue the Joker's work. And a bunch of victims of the Joker's, you have to kind of wonder, what happened to all the people that were affected by Joker's
smile
toxin,
thing, yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah, they never explain it in Batman Returns. Well, this book does, and they explain what happened to the Joker's gang, too, including a few members of the gang, which, by the way, you would never know the names of other than Bob Magoon and Lawrence. When Joker says, Lawrence, let's broaden their mind. He's the boombox operator. In the book, the author in the back of the book, at the end of the whole book is finished, he says that I took a lot of the names from the novelization of the movie so I could figure out who the names of some of these other characters were that we saw in the film who were never actually named.
Wow. That's and actually pretty brilliant.
Yeah, the villains of the story are Hugo Strange and Clayface. And of course, I don't know if you just heard, Matt, we're going to get a Clayface movie in James Gunn's new DC Universe, directed by the guy who makes all those Netflix horror TV shows.
I'm actually excited for that because Clayface was always one of my favorite villains.
And he was played by Ron Perlman in the Batman the Animated Series. And apparently the director akins it to, he said, watch The Fly and The Substance with Demi Moore, which just won a Golden Globe, her first ever award, which I cannot believe that ever. She won that for The Substance, and he's taking a lot of inspiration from those two films.
Well, The Substance was excellent. I have watched it like 5 times so far. Love that movie.
Yeah, so pick up Batman Resurrection. Next year, we're going to get a new book from the same author set in the universe between Batman and Batman Returns called Batman Revolution. It's a lot of fun. It's a good book. Demi Moore, by the way, I had no fucking idea. She is the model for the poster for I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, that's nice. Her backside in the shredded, torn-up shirt holding the knife.
Wow.
Yeah. I always thought that was Camilla Keaton, the actress in the film. They're like, no, that was Demi Moore's actual first probably film, quote-unquote film role. She's a poster girl, but she's not in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, Keaton's the rape revenge girl, so... But I digress. Yeah, so I read that. I just finished the Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 3 animated movie, and I got the Crisis on Infinite Earths box set, which contains 15 volumes of the Crisis and all its tie-ins and all crises that happened prior to Infinite Earths in one giant box set for a steal at a comic book store called Rubber Chicken Comics.
Cool.
Volume hardcover box set of the entire Crisis storyline, all tie-ins, and any and all Crisis crossovers that happened prior to the Infinite Earths one.
Sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't we move on to some more DC stuff with Powerless Episode 2, Wayne Dream Team.
And it's such a shame that this show is canceled because these two episodes are amazing.
They are. They are. Do you have a plot synopsis for us?
I do. We have the episode, season 1, episode 2, Wayne Dream Team, originally aired Thursday, February 9th, 2017. With a new product idea greenlit, Emily tries to get her team inspired. Van is on a mission to be included in the Wayne Dream Team photo. Now, this isn't a very interesting product that they are talking about in this entire episode, the Rumbrella.
Yeah, we get a lot of Van Wayne's like snarkiness in this, and you can see why he was cast as the Joker in the Harley Quinn animated series.
Well, he's just so good.
Yeah, Alan Tudyk's fantastic. He's pulling double duty. We have Harley Quinn season 4 coming out this year, and he's going to return to play KTSO, the Black Protocol droid from Rogue One in Cassian Andor season 2.
Ah, is Resident Alien still on? Still going on?
I don't know. I watched it on Netflix and I haven't caught it. I haven't stayed up with it, but Alan Tudyk is also one of the Creature Commandos in the Creature Commandos animated series, which is part of James Gunn's new DC universe.
I'm glad he gets so much work. I'll say that. I love him.
He plays Dr. Phosphorus, who's like a glow-in-the-dark skeleton man. Kind of looks like Blight from Batman Beyond.
Okay. In this episode, he is absolutely incensed that the Wayne Dream Team photo has him cut off. Like, you only see his shoulder. When we finally see the full picture later on, we can understand why he was cut out of the picture. Because his face does not look good in it. He's got his eyes kind of closed. It's not a very good face. But during this episode, yeah, he photoshops himself into that picture, and hilarity ensues.
It's a bit ridiculous. We also get a a cameo by a character I didn't even know was a DC villain, by the way. I'm so familiar with Jack-O-Lantern from the Marvel Universe, who was Jason Philip McIndale, who went on to become the second Hobgoblin. But I really had to do a deep dive to find out who the fuck is the Jack-O-Lantern. He's a Green Lantern villain.
Oh. Huh. I would have pegged him for a different villain. Like, maybe I'm just confusing like Spider-Man's the Green Goblin's pumpkin bombs, like, because the Jack-O-Lantern does throw pumpkins.
He's got three first appearances for some reason. Super Friends number 8, which was a comic book tie into the animated series from the 70s and 80s. Justice League Europe Annual number 1, and Justice League Quarterly number 14. I couldn't even tell you anything about him other than the fact that Marvin Knorr portrays him in this episode. The Marvin Noronha incarnation of Jack-O-Lantern in this episode is played by Kimani Ray Smith.
Yes, and he's only in the very first opening scenes where, Jackie and Emily are walking and going to get something to eat, much to Jackie's chagrin. And the Jack-O-Lantern shows up, explodes some things, maybe some people, we don't know, and then takes off. But one thing I noticed is that they weren't wearing their Jack-O-Alert alarms. They would have totally avoided that had they been wearing their Jack-Alerts.
It's so funny how the way he looks, considering that he looks like the Headless Horseman, right? In the comic books, he looks like Prowler, if you know who Prowler is from Spider-Man.
No, I don't.
You didn't see the Spider-Verse movie?
No, I have motion sickness, so I can't watch those movies.
Oh, it is such a great film. Spider-Verse's Prowler is Uncle Aaron, Miles Morales' uncle. The original Prowler is Hobie Brown. Both African-American superhero, supervillain, you know, depending on what side of the law they're falling onto at that point. And that's what the actual character in the comic books looks like. Again, this TV show, they made him look like the Headless Horseman.
Yeah, with a cape.
With a cape in a flying broomstick.
And he takes joy in exploding the pastry stand where they were just about to buy their pastries. And yeah, he says, nailed it!
Like, nothing's for sale. We're closed.
Yeah.
The debris umbrella idea, I think, is fantastic. How they execute it is with, like, crash test dummies, and they have to figure out how to get it to work without the heads of the dummies falling off.
And here's the thing, is, like, they have the umbrella, the rumbrella, shaped just like a regular umbrella. It has a handle, you know, but it doesn't have anything going to the ground to kind of keep it up. So it's just your arm power. And, you know, we know that if something were to land on that umbrella, the strength of your arm is not going to keep that upright. They didn't solve that issue. That wasn't an issue in the episode. It's more like, you know, that cartoon level, you know, umbrella. Now everyone needs a umbrella so that no one can be crushed by rubble. But it would have been nice had that the umbrella been more like, say, a beach umbrella style. At least for my home. Yeah, I know. It's a cartoonish show.
It's like Mystery Science Theater 3000. There's an episode where they create an umbrella that has a gutter that runs the water out the back so the water from the umbrella doesn't run onto your shoes.
Yeah, nice. But then it'll run all across your backpack if you're wearing a backpack.
And of course, in this universe, they would have a fantasy superhero league like we have a sports league for football.
Yeah, I'm not a sports person, so I don't really know how it works. How would you do that with superheroes?
Whoever's superhero. So in sports, it's whoever makes, like, certain plays. So you basically pick your best players from various teams. That's your fantasy team. Mm-hmm. And whoever happens to, like, run a pass, catch a ball, obviously score a touchdown, tackle somebody, things like that, you get points per week leading to the pool at the end of the week.
All right, that makes a little bit more sense.
I'm assuming with this, it's a matter of the superheroes saving people.
Yeah, because later in the episode, Crimson Fox is Emily's choice for a superhero, and she saves a cruise ship versus Flash, which gets kind of transported to a different dimension. So he can't actually participate in this year's league. So, yeah,
I thought that was very strange. The Flash was fighting Sinestro and he gets transported to the Phantom Zone. You're familiar with the Phantom Zone from Christopher Reeve's movies because that's where General Zod and the Phantom Zone criminals come from.
Yes, yes.
Superman just wrapped up in the comic books after 12 weeks. They wrapped up 12 weekly issues of Action Comics called where Superman has to go into the Phantom Zone and the criminals break free and they're using some device inside the Phantom Zone to suck out energy from the sun.
I think
it's kind of funny that that whoever the writers of the show were decided to pair Sinestro with the Flash, because Sinestro is Green Lantern's primary villain. He is like the leader of the Sinestro Corps, which is a bunch of yellow lanterns.
Okay. Yeah, because yellow is fear, right?
Yellow is fear, and it's once upon a time, it's Parallax, the fear demon. It was once upon a time the only invulnerability that the Green Ring had, and eventually they did away with that because it once they figured out what the yellow impurity is, it's the Parallax fear demon, which was trapped inside the power battery. It didn't feel necessary to write that as a plot point anymore, and they really have it for years.
Okay.
So the only downside to having a Green Lantern ring is you're basically how much willpower you have.
Okay, yeah.
So anyway, who is this? Who's the HR manager?
The HR manager, Samuel Green, who is very short and takes a lot of pleasure in his HR life-ruining job, is played by Michael D. Cohen. And he's an actor and a director. And he was on Henry Danger for 97 episodes as Schwaz. Danger Force, I think it's a sequel to that, for 68 episodes. And let's see, he was director for an upcoming short called Roughing It. Oh, and he was also director for Danger Force for 5 episodes.
I think it's also funny that for this episode, we have kind of like a Kenny of the show. We have this woman, Susan, who he pulls a picture of her daughter's swim team off her desk, calling it, promiscuous for the workplace, inappropriate because they're all in bathing suits. And my only question is, after having glanced at the photo, then looking at it online, how old is Susan that she has a daughter that looks that old? Because Susan doesn't look like she's anywhere out of her 20s.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. Look at the photo of her daughter. They're all definitely teenagers based on how they look in their bathing suits.
At least 14.
At least 14. And Susan doesn't look like she's any older than Vanessa Hutchinson.
True. That is an odd thing. Yeah.
And Vanessa Hutchinson's like 29 when the show was being filmed, so.
Yeah, that would have been a very, very young pregnancy.
A little bit, just a little strange, but I digress. I mean, I guess it's no different than Indiana Jones, his father being played by Sean Connery, is only 12 years older than Harrison Ford.
Yeah, but Sean Connery at least had gray hair, was pulling it off.
I love the fact that nobody knows what HR does. HR gets you in trouble. That's all they do.
One of the points that I didn't look it up because I didn't know how to look it up, but that the Wayne fortune, Van mentions that they leveraged a coal monopoly in the 1870s. Do you have any information about that fact?
Yeah, so where the Wayne family money comes from has always changed based on the continuity. It's one of those things that, Mark Bernardin on Kevin Smith's podcast made a point saying that Bruce Wayne has to be white because he comes from old money, and no black person in America had old money back in the day. So it wouldn't make sense to make him like this rich heir to a fortune from that goes back centuries in Gotham. And in multiple iterations, with the exception of Absolute Batman, Bruce Wayne doesn't have any money. He's doing all the Batman stuff however he's doing it. They haven't quite explained it. But he doesn't have the Wayne fortune. That's the whole point of Absolute Batman. It's a different universe Batman without the money, without the car.
Okay.
Superman's also a criminal from Krypton, and Diana is the princess of hell, raised by Cersei.
Oh, wow. That is different.
Yeah, it's very different. It's because Darkseid killed himself, and his energy created this new universe where events unfolded quite differently and darker Whereas, like, every time he tries to manipulate events in the DC universe, there's just always going to be hope within Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and other heroes that's going to stop him eventually. They will put right what once went wrong with Darkseid and come out on top. And he can't win. So he goes to another universe, kills himself, and uses his energy to create a universe in his, like, darker image.
Wow. That's really off the rails.
That is happening right now in DC Comics. That is the absolute universe between those three characters. But yes, according to DC Comics website, Alan Wayne established Wayne Shipping and Wayne Chemicals in the 1800s.
Shipping and Chemicals. Huh. Okay.
Yeah. And he became a powerful conglomerate in the Industrial Revolution.
All right. Well, Emily, this episode is trying to be the good boss and also a friend. And both those things don't go together.
Nope, although they both.
I mean, I guess if you were a villain, then you could do both because you'd want your henchmen to have some sort of like emotional tie to you. But in an office, yeah, not a good idea.
No, they get the umbrella made. Wayne gets his photo. Van gets his photo, of course.
I love that the office took the photo that he photoshopped in, which is him with finger guns, and then they absolutely memed it. They took that photo, put him in every situation, like on the beach, in the mountains, in the ocean. Like, they just completely covered the picture, the poster on the wall, with these meme photos. It was hilarious. But the HR guy still hates Van, no matter what.
Yeah.
Still hates Van.
And Emily had to watch hours of this awful anti-bullying video.
24 hours in order to get their internet back. Because she told HR that their fantasy league was interrupting business, and he took it upon himself to shut off the entire internet because he wants to show that he's doing something as HR. And she takes the bullet. She takes 24 hours of anti-bullying to take their mandated requirement of seeing this anti-bullying video because of what they did to Van. She takes the hit, she watches the videos, they get the internet back, and they're happy with her. Even during the beginning of part of the episode where they thought that she was going to bat for them with HR and temporarily got on their good side, but when they found out that she was the one that actually turned off the internet, they were pissed again, as they should have been. But at the end, you know, she joins their fantasy superhero league and is kind of on good terms with them. Friendly.
Professor Zoom is also mentioned, by the way. Professor Zoom is the Reverse Flash. He's the one who killed Barry's mother.
Oh, okay. The one in the yellow costume, right?
Correct. If you saw the Flash movie or you watched the Flash TV show, he was a big villain on that. If you watched the Flash movie, question that was never answered at the end of the movie was, well, then if his dad didn't do it, obviously his dad didn't do it, who killed his mother? And they never got a chance to reveal that it was the Reverse Flash, because he went back in time to create the time loop. You know what I mean? Kind of like Kyle Reese going back in time to impregnate Sarah Connor.
Yeah, yeah. There's one point that I want to kind of drag from this episode into the next one, is that Van, even though he is narcissistic, he also really cares. In this kind of weird way, because Jackie says that, you know, when Emily asked her, why do you put up with him? And she says that that Van always remembers her birthday, got her kid into a good school, and paid for euthanasia for her dog. And then in this next episode, like, we get more of his kind of ability to actually close deals. It's kind of interesting, the management style of Van, which is kind of not management, but is in a way. Episode synopsis. Episode 1, or season 1, episode 3, Sinking Day, originally aired Thursday, February 16th, 2017. When Van's incompetence costs the team a client, Emily hopes to make a deal with the people of Atlantis, and Van's father sets him on a path of redemption. Throughout this episode, Emily talks about her dad and the flower shop a lot. and about how her dad is like a manager that she won't want to kind of, you know, work under. And in this episode, we get Van's two tips for successful and being successful in business. One, never let them leave without saying yes. And two, find out personal information about your client and exploit it for your own gain. And those two points are kind of illustrated very much within this episode. And it also turns out pretty good. So this episode is really funny because it's the city of Atlantis. And we find out that Ron is actually an Atlantean. But everyone, well, not everyone, Van and Emily thought he was from Atlanta, not Atlantis. A little bit of racist, they say. But
right. So there's also something funny about Ron, Ron Funches being from Atlantis.
Because he's King Shark.
Yeah, on Harley Quinn, he's King Shark. He's from Atlantis.
Yeah. And we do find out some little tidbits about the Atlanteans in this episode, such as they do half circumcisions. I don't even know how you could do a half circumcision. Because the statue that they have during the sinking day party, you know, that he's using to impress the clients from Atlantis, has a statue of King Orin, and they mention that he's half circumcised, as is their tradition.
We also get Bill A. Jones as Marv Wolfman, writer, which is named after, of course, the exact name for writer Marv Wolfman of Teen Titans and the Crisis on Infinite Earths fame. And Sandra Purpuro, who plays Gail Simone. Gail Simone is a writer of Birds of Prey, the comic book, and currently now writer of Uncanny X-Men.
Nice.
In the episode, we also get a character named Anthony, makes a very quick kind of cameo. That's artist Mike McGee, best known for his work on Superman, Batman, The Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, and so many more.
Nice. The other Atlanteans are Lars, played by Eric Neninger. And Eric Neninger, I'm sure that you would definitely recognize his face, but he was on Generation Kill, Malcolm in the Middle, as Eric Hansen, and on Wet Hot American Summer, First Day, as Warner. And I think, he was on History of the World Part 2, the miniseries.
I did not watch that yet.
It's pretty good. I liked it. Of course, anything really makes me laugh, so. the other Atlantean is Albert, played by Paul Hertel. And he was on Sweet By and By as a producer on TV miniseries. And Founders Alchemy also as a producer. He's doing a lot of production work recently. I think his last acting gig was a Pig Blood Vampire. I don't know what that is, but that was from 2020.
Sounds like a terrible TV show.
I don't know, maybe. But as a producer, he's has some upcoming projects such as Waterways, The Ballad of Chatsworth Joe, 2020 Valley Boy, and Anatomy of the Gods. That last one sounds pretty interesting. Van loses a client. He loses Ace Chemicals. And Ace Chemicals, you know, as his dad mentions in the episode, was the first client that they had. And it's worth $75 million a year to Wayne Security. So his dad is really, really pissed off, and with good reason. You know, losing that large of a client would make any corporation, like, you know, wring a CEO's neck. And Van is definitely not a CEO. But Atlantis... Yeah. I think it's mentioned in the episode that it's like five times as big as Ace Chemicals. Like, it's exponentially larger than a client that they've ever had. It's the largest client that they've ever had, and they need to land this client big time. And using his management skills and sales tactics, like, he has a charm that really just exudes out of his pores. The Atlanteans, you know, he talks really fast, and the Atlanteans pick up on it, and they kind of go along with it. So when Van says that he celebrates with a big party sinking day, and then Emily and Jackie have to put together an entire party in one day, just to make sure that Van isn't lying. It's really funny. They didn't in this episode mention, like, even though Ron is from Atlantis, they don't have any scenes of him kind of consulting on what a sinking day party should be. I think that was a scene that, you know, I would have liked to have in there. But, you know, it is not. They misunderstand a couple things, like the tuna is an ally of theirs and not dinner. So, you know, even though they had prepared a tuna to eat, it gets kind of shuffled away so as not to upset the Atlanteans. And Van gives the Atlanteans each a gift based off of that personal information that he's exploited. One, he gives an ancient bottle of wine or cognac. However, it's not that at all. You know, it is a cheap bottle of cognac that Jackie put some diesel fuel on to obscure the label. The second one, Lars gets the entire collection of Brendan Fraser movies because somehow, you know, the Atlanteans just love Brendan Fraser. He's a great actor. But Van kind of makes it sound like, you know, he's got no idea why they like him. And then the last, And the last Atlantean, he gives two bottles of perfume, one for your wife and one for whoever. And he had mentioned that, you know, you give your mistress the same perfume as your wife so you don't get caught. I really, really love this episode.
Yeah, the Olympian, by the way, Alex is the Olympian. It is very loosely based on a character that has had two identities, one from the old Super Friends that I mentioned before, and Gail Simone created a version of the Olympian, hence why I guess they had an actress like use her name in this episode, I think. Because a character she created is in this episode, so they probably wanted to, like, give her respect for, like, creating the character. She became kind of like a foil of Wonder Woman for a very brief time period in Rise of the Olympian storyline, where they try to take over Themyscira.
The Alex, the Olympian in this episode, is played by Matthew Atkinson. He is very recognizable from The Bold and the Beautiful. He's been on 676 episodes as Thomas Forrester. And he was also on The Young and the Restless as Austin Travers for 94 episodes. So he's very adorable, very cute, and Jackie is all about wanting to slip and slide along Alex's frame.
That's pretty much all the notes I have for this episode. That's all the notes I have for this episode of Powerless.
Me too. I love, like, this episode.
It was fun and quirky. The show was very bright and colorful. I don't understand why it got canceled, but I digress. NBC, it apparently was blamed on NBC's, like, changing presidents. So when that happens, shows will get canceled.
I think it was just a show before its time.
I don't know. The Office had already come and gone at this point.
Well, I mean, I don't know, like, superheroes were definitely big, but maybe it would have had more awareness, you know, had it been,
yeah,
like,
I mean, this was 2017. I mean, like, we're, like, this is, like, the year before Infinity War. So, like, the fever of the Marvel Universe was huge. DC, depending on what it was that was coming up, Wonder Woman came out this year, so.
Yeah, but if you had had this show in 2020, people would have totally been into it.
Right, but it would have been heavily delayed and possibly canceled because of COVID.
Oh.
So maybe like a couple of years prior to this, maybe the change from the Wayne Tech people from the insurance company. I don't know. But I digress. We're going to be with it through the end, all 13 episodes of this fantastic one-and-done DC season of a show. Our second foray into the DC universe, by the way, because we did Constantine.
Yeah. Constantine was a great show.
Obviously, it was another great show that got canceled unceremoniously, I think by the same network, right?
Oh, I don't remember what network that one was on.
I think it was on CBS.
Hmm.
Or maybe it was NBC. I remember Constantine and Dracula were on the same network, and they got canceled after one season. Supergirl got canceled after a season, but Supergirl was produced by the WB, and it was put on another network, and then they carried it over to the WB, which people said, why don't you just do that to begin with? They made that big deal about the Flash guest starring on Supergirl, and it was just like, oh, it was really expensive to do because of the two networks. And it was like, Okay, then why didn't you just put Supergirl on the WB?
Yeah.
CW, sorry, the CW. Anyway, I digress. Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Amazon Music. I don't think Google Play is doing anything anymore.
I don't know. Audible? Yeah.
We're on iHeartRadio. Episode 2025 of Powerless here on the Dead TV Podcast.
Good night.